We have no financial relationships to disclose. And we must acknowledge first that we are funded by a drug-free community support grant from SAMHSA, in addition to acknowledging our research partners at Case Western Reserve with the Prevention Research Center and the Community Health Research Group. The objective of our presentation today is to describe a comprehensive evaluation of a community coalition utilizing a youth development social inclusion approach to substance abuse prevention. I'll begin with a brief overview of our intervention timeline. It's important to note while we're going through this that this is really where these specific programs have started or were initiated as a part of our program, and they have maintained a presence throughout the course of our program. We did in fact receive a drug-free community grant in 2001, and with the exception of 1 year, we've been funded since that time. We first initiated the YRBS, which is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, in 2002. And those of you familiar with the YRBS should know that it is implemented widely on the local, state, and national level. We also developed and introduced the SHARP program. SHARP stands for Student Health Advocates Reaching Peers, and it is a peer advocacy and education approach where high school students are trained and then work specifically with middle school and upper elementary school students in faith, community, and school-based settings. I'll point out on these slides those things that are a bit less intuitive. So we'll move forward to a few things that have continued. In terms of the social transition sessions, we recognize that the schools do a good job of handling the logistic and academic transition to different schools. So for example, the transition from elementary school to middle school, or the transition from middle school to high school. Those are pretty challenging times. And what we choose to do is focus on navigating the new social dynamic and spend time working with both parents and young people and helping them to, in a very healthy way, make that transition. We've also initiated the Shaker MAPS program. MAPS stands for Maintaining the Adult Protective Shield. And if you consider a neighborhood watch group or a neighborhood watch approach, the MAPS approach says, let's take this neighborhood safety concept and apply it to young people. And so we're focusing on a healthy youth. We're protecting our youth in the community. We've also implemented the Shakerosity. So this is a social inclusion program that has two parts, which basically says we want to increase the involvement of those in our community who are not necessarily included or involved, but also promotes a social marketing campaign that focuses on the look and feel and sound of Shaker and what it is to be of the Shaker community. And finally, we implemented the School Health Promotion Survey, which is largely based on this increasing body of knowledge between health and academic achievement. In terms of level of evidence, a couple of things that we will cover here today, as you can see, and we will provide evidence to support our theoretical foundation and our evidence-based approach. We've had an ongoing community needs assessment since the beginning of the program, and both qualitative and quantitative measures. It's important to note also that with coalition work, a lot of the gains that you achieve are really long-term. So we've learned to really focus on celebrating those small successes and achievements along the way. In terms of the demographics of Shaker, Shaker Heights is located as an eastern suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. So this graph shows Shaker in comparison with Cleveland, which is the large urban center that we share a border with, and Cuyahoga County, where both Shaker and Cleveland are located. In terms of our drug-free community grant, the GPRA Act, the government Core Performance and Results Act, mandated that we were required to measure the following things. So current and lifetime use of tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, attitudes about disapproval and perception of disapproval, as well as perception of harm. In terms of the theoretical foundation, we won't go into these in too much detail, but it's important to note that we have a strong theoretical foundation in both the planning of our programs, our understanding of behavior and why it occurs, but also how to change behavior. When we were putting this slide together, we thought, well, how is the text going to show? And it's a bit sort of crowded on the slide, but I think it's a good way of showing the diversity of people who are involved in our coalition and the number of people from different stakeholders who are actively involved. In terms of our strategic approach, so I've covered a few of these, and I'll talk a bit about a few of them in more detail. So our Student Health Advocate Reaching Peers Group, or SHARP, is an example of peer education and advocacy. Over time, we've also created a junior SHARP program such that middle school students are now working with elementary schools on substance abuse prevention and other health promotion efforts. We have also implemented life skills training, which is a substance abuse prevention and personal development curriculum. It is evidence-based, and we've worked to implement that strategically within the school health curriculum at the sixth grade level. In terms of capacity building, cultural competence, and sustainability, beyond this grant, we also recognize that it's important to train the youth link professionals in our community. So those are individuals who have professional training and preparation to work with youth in school, community, and faith-based settings. And finally, we have multiple social marketing campaigns, from Parents Who Host Lose the Most, which targets parents to make them aware of our social host laws in the state of Ohio. To explain a little bit about what that means is, essentially in Ohio, you are allowed to provide alcohol to your child, but not to someone else's child. So there's a little confusion about that. Also with coalition work on the grassroots level, we've learned that it's really important to focus on policy with a little p and policy with a big P as well. So a couple of the things that we started working with were a school policy summit. Parents, young people, administrators, staff weren't really well aware of what the alcohol policy was, what the consequence it was of being involved in sort of alcohol, tobacco, or drug use, who was involved, what the process looked like. So we worked really hard to increase awareness about that. We've also worked to infuse life skills training into the sixth grade curriculum, so it's actually a part of the curriculum. We also implemented compliance checks, both alcohol and tobacco compliance checks, and worked to include the diversion program so that students who were suffering from issues with substance use were entered into this sort of an intervention program where they met with a magistrate and received treatment and did some form of community service as well. In terms of parental interventions, we've also noticed that it's really important to capitalize on these teachable moments. We've had several high-profile events in the community that represent these sort of current events or teachable moments that we use to take advantage of, and we discuss those issues in our social transition sessions. I've mentioned briefly the Shaker MAPS program, but also the core agreements. This MAPS pledge says that we agree that we want to promote the health and safety and general well-being of our children. We have various communication channels, so you'll see we have a website, we use the Community Health Department magazine, we've had different community forums, and we are current with our social media. In terms of the qualitative assessment, we wanted to look at the perceived effects of substance use, and we wanted to do both key informant interviews and focus groups. The questions were based on the parental survey on underage drinking, which was also implemented in 2006. There were four key informant interviews, and these were individuals who were identified as key stakeholders in the community who were also actively involved in the coalition. We also conducted four focus groups. You'll notice there were three groups of adults and one group of young people who were in attendance. And the focus group sessions were transcribed with Word and analyzed with InVivo, using a modified grounded theory approach. In terms of recommendations, I'm going to actually turn it over to Dr. Frank right now, but you can see that what we found is it was really encouraging to how we were going to move forward with the coalition. We know we needed to focus more on social marketing. We know we needed to focus more on the policies at the grassroots level, and we needed to also increase our strategies for parent education, as well as provide some clarification about the difference between alcohol and tobacco compliance checks.
Thank you, Christina, and good fast talking. The last slide looked at the methodology, methods that we used for doing evaluation of the effectiveness of our peer education things, and I'm not sure I know how to reverse it, so I'm just going to go with the findings, and that includes that there was a significant improvement in attitudes, knowledge, and knowledge on pretests and post-tests, and a significant improvement in susceptibility scores among our fifth and sixth graders at Woodbury School. Girls and boys had comparable results for improvement in knowledge, but the change was significant for boys in attitude, but not for girls. I will mention, however, that the girls' attitude, even as it didn't significantly improve, was better than the boys' attitude. Students with prior smoking history showed less change in their knowledge, attitudes, and susceptibility, not surprisingly. The most important data that we want to present today really involves our longitudinal use of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey-based assessment that we've done between 2002 and 2009. Again, because of time, I'm going to spend less time on the methods and more time on the results. And somehow that slide got included twice. So this is what we looked at here for our results. You can see that we implemented the intervention in the 2003-2004 school year among fifth and sixth graders, so the results really would not have started to be illustrated until our 2006 survey, and we see a big drop in current and lifetime alcohol use among seventh and eighth graders during that time. We see a similar drop for cigarette use, lifetime and current. We see a drop in marijuana use, but not in, lifetime marijuana use, but not in current marijuana use. Attitudes of the students, we see an upswing in the perception that alcohol is wrong, and a mild increase in the extent to which parents perceive alcohol as wrong. Perception of harm is a key focus of our intervention, increasing the perception of harm. And you can see when we started measuring this in 2006, we've had a stark increase in the perception of harm during that time, which I think can be reliably attributed to the coalition's efforts. While there are many things that affect substance use, these attitudes and knowledge really are the point of the teaching that was being done by the peer educators in the schools at the time. We see similar results in the high school, somewhat less impressive, but that's also because we're waiting for that group who got the intervention to move through their high school careers, but there is significant decrease in lifetime alcohol, current binge drinking, and decrease in early onset of alcohol use, a starker decrease in cigarette use, with lifetime current cigarette use both decreasing. Again, we see significant changes in high school student attitudes about alcohol. I must admit, at times I'm amazed that we see this increased perception that alcohol is very wrong among our students, that cigarette use and marijuana use are wrong also have significantly increased since implementing our intervention. There is no significant change in students' perception of parental attitudes about substance use, however. We also recognize that in order to state that our program has had an impact, we need to demonstrate reach. And you can see here that we've reached 180 high school peer advocates, more than 3,000 middle school students, and more than 1,500 parents with our programming. Key findings are listed here and include that our qualitative study supported the community perception of the Prevention Coalition as a success and made further recommendations for coalition development. There is evidence of effectiveness for the peer education programs and post-intervention improvement in virtually all of our grant-required metrics. Our conclusions are that an inclusive community coalition using a social ecological approach and both evidence-based and innovative community-tailored programming can make a meaningful difference in social norms and substance use behavior in a racially and economically diverse first-ring suburb. While our study design doesn't allow us to conclusively prove coalition effectiveness, we believe that there is strong evidence supporting an important contribution of the coalition to these changes that have occurred. Thank you for your attention.